Friday, October 18th, the Norris Group proudly presented its sixth annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts joined Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude's Children's Hospital. This event could not have been possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Property Radar and Sean O'Toole, Housing Wire, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association and President Bill Tan, Investors Workshops and Sean Watkins, Angel Bronsgeist and Sarah Benora, Invest Club for Women and Iris Veneration and Bobby Alexander, San Jose Real Estate Investors Association and Geraldine Barry, MVT Productions, Rhoda Construction, Wilson Investment Properties, and White House Catering. For event video and information, visit isurvivedrealestate.com.
Well, welcome to I Survived Real Estate 2013. I am Aaron Norris, and I will be your MC for this evening.
Thank you.
Thanks again, all the platinum partners, for helping out tonight. Zane Forshi, the classical guitarist, flew all the way from Maryland as a favor for me tonight for your entertainment. Thank you, Zane. Lord knows it would not be appetizing if you had me playing guitar for you this evening. And special thanks to our TNG team who's migrated over the years to the very back of the room. Craig Hill, Robin, Rhonda, Vicky, Greg, Rich, Amy, Ken, Donna, Joe, Kirsten, Alicia, for being a part of the incredible team. And a very special thanks to Diana Barlay, who had the distinct privilege of seating 450 people and setting the tables tonight. So I Survived Real Estate has always been about a cause and a conversation. Tonight, we have blown away all past records for raising money. We've together raised $90,000 this year alone. That's pretty great. For those that are tuning in at home, not here, which is unfortunate, but we ran out 3 weeks ago of seats, which is the first time we've ever sold out that early. I Survive Real Estate is underwritten by the Norris Group, so 100% of the money we raise here goes to charity. Some of the audience members tonight actually didn't have a dime out of their own pocket. They simply created a giving page on our site run by Make-A-Wish, asked their friends, colleagues, whoever would just donate, and they're here just because they decided to raise over $200. But some of them raised a lot of money. Actually, 20 people participated, actually over that amount, raising over $12,000. And if you could stand, if you participated in the individual fundraising competition this year, that would be awesome. Where are you? You're all up front somewhere. And Tim Gordon, this gentleman right here, is our fundraising winner. $1,100. Thank you, sir. You did an awesome job. So our efforts tonight benefit two very important charities that benefit children struggling with life-threatening illnesses. And I'm going to call Lainey Strauss up. She is with St. Jude, one of the beneficiaries of tonight, and she's going to talk to us.
That's right. 3 hours of traffic, but it was worth it because I get to be in a room with all of you people who help make it possible to do what we do. I'm proud to say that none of those patients ever see a bill. And that's one of the most important things that I can say to you, because with many of the treatments, some of them cost up to $1 million, and the patients never have to worry about paying for that. All they have to worry about is caring for their child, which is enough. That's enough to worry about. I spoke with a family not too long ago, and their son had gone to another children's hospital and gotten very good treatment. But he needed more, and he wasn't able to get it because insurance said, I'm sorry, we can't give you any more. You've exceeded your amount. That's something that never happens at St. Jude. We can treat children just based on their needs. We never have to say no. And the reason why we never have to say no is because of generous people like you in this room. So from the bottom of my heart, I just want to say thank you for that, because if it's $5, $10, $100, $5,000, whatever it is that you give, it goes directly to the children. And that's how we are able to do what we do for those children. So thank you. I'm going to let you enjoy your evening now and shut up. But thank you so much. I'm so grateful. Thank you.
That's just one tonight. We're going to bring Sarah Pizzaruto up. Sarah with Make-A-Wish, please.
Hello, good evening, everyone, and thank you, Aaron. As you already know, at Make-A-Wish, we grant wishes for kids with life-threatening medical conditions. Our mission is to enrich the human experience with hope, strength, and joy. Now, it does seem pretty obvious that granting a wish would give our wish kids hope, strength, and joy. But the surprising part is how that mission extends well beyond just the children themselves. A few months ago, we met 7-year-old Alex, who is battling leukemia. A huge comic book fan, Alex's simple wish was to fight crime and help people. He loves Batman and could think of nothing more exciting than spending the day with his hero, battling bad guys, and maybe being in a movie. You just saw Alex's wish come true just 2 weeks ago. From being called to the police chief's office to be sworn in, to chasing the Riddler around the city, to finally putting away his nemesis for good, it was an adventure unlike any other. Now, I knew as the wish was being planned how it might change this little superhero's life. But I wasn't prepared for the ripple effect. You see, I spent the day with Alex's mom. A mother of 3 small children, she rarely gets the chance to indulge her oldest son's elaborate fantasies. Instead, as a parent of a child battling a life-threatening illness, she often plays the role of the bad guy, the shuttler to the hospital for treatment, the enforcer of playtime rules when things get a little too rough for Alex and his compromised immune system, and the constant worrier. But that day, she watched in awe as everything Alex dreamed of unfolded right before him. She watched him giggle as his costume was presented to him. She laughed as he radioed his fellow officers to tell them that the Riddler was in his sights. And she heard him yell from the helicopter just before it took off, "This is a dream come true." I realized then that the wish didn't just give Alex hope, strength, and joy. It gave the same to his mom and dad. And now, as we continue to tell the stories of the day, I've noticed something even more amazing. It wasn't just the family that received a wish that day. It was the police officers and stuntmen who put on the performance of a lifetime. It was the volunteers who helped put it together. It was the film crew, the helicopter pilot, and the damsel in distress. And it was the crowd in the hero's welcome ceremony. Hundreds of us in just that one afternoon. Alex's wish left us all filled with hope, strength, and joy. That's the power of Make-A-Wish. This year, our chapter will grant 315 wishes like Alex's for kids from all over Orange County and the Inland Empire. That's a wish every 27 hours. We will also assist with over 600 wishes from kids from all over the world who visit us to see local sites like Disneyland or meet their favorite celebrity. Unfortunately, according to the Centers for Disease Control, we are still only reaching about half of the eligible children in our area. But thanks to your support today, you'll help us reach our goal to make sure every kid facing a life-threatening medical condition will have the opportunity to live out their truest wish, just like Alex. On behalf of everyone at Make-A-Wish, our staff, our volunteers, our board of directors, and most importantly, our wish kids, I thank each and every one of you here tonight for the incredible support. With friends like you and all of you here tonight, we know that we can help turn life-threatening illnesses into life-affirming triumphs. Thanks you so much.
We've brought in 6 people, some thought leaders in real estate from around the country, and they've joined us here tonight. Hopefully the conversation on stage tonight gives us a better idea of what remains in 2013 and what we can look forward to in 2014. I'd now like to introduce the host for this evening. He's been real estate for 30 years. He's been part of thousands of transactions as builder, investor, and hard money lender. He hosts our weekly award-winning radio show and spends much of his time researching nerdy things like congressional bills, bailouts, and economic trends. And he's also our only black belt as of 2 weeks ago in the office. Bruce Norris.
Oh, thank you. thank you for sharing tonight with us again. Many years ago, I attended a Jim Rohn seminar, and he inspired me to write goals. And goals are sort of lies that you tell, you pretend they're true, and then you work until they are. And I wrote two of them that first night that were complete fabrications. And one of them was that I get up to speak and I get a standing ovation. That was a ridiculous lie. If I had had the guts to write a third one, it would have been that Sensei Paolo Yusso, who's a very dear friend of mine, I bow into him and he hands me a black belt. And I would like him to stand along with his wife. Sensei Paolo Yusso and Sandy are very dear friends, and they have the most unusual business that literally is a legacy business where people bring their grandkids and say, I took karate here 35 years ago, and this is where you're going to take it. So, wuss. This will be the briefest presentation I probably have ever done because, to be honest with you, I'm more interested in asking questions of our panel than I am telling you what I think. There's a lot of very special people on the panel that have some insights that I would like to understand a little better. And a lot of you have heard me speak about this type of subject before. I feel more optimistic about where we land price-wise probably than anybody on the panel. If I'm wrong, I'd sure like to know, and you probably like to know it too. So I'm not going to avoid questions that challenge things that I've told you, okay? That's what's the point of this. The point is we have the best and brightest people in the country, and I would like to ask them questions to see if I can clarify where my opinion differs from theirs. And so that'll be what's fun tonight. It means we're going to disagree. Isn't that good? Yeah. And so we'll bat it around a little bit. Okay. The event's called I Survive Real Estate, but last year wasn't really about surviving, was it? It was kind of fun. So those of us that owned real estate, it went up, and we kind of like that. And so that's been the first time in a while that we can say we had aggressive price increases, and that caught a lot of people by surprise, and they didn't see that one coming. This is the supply of people that are underwater. So you have a big price increase, this number drops. And not only does it drop down to 15%, but that 15% has got to be encouraged to say, you know what, I might as well hang in there. I've hung in this long. And so you start having other side effects, like they're not going to default. What's interesting is we've accomplished this price increase without a big boom in sales. That's sales over the last few years, and it's been kind of consistent, but it hasn't been extraordinary. As a matter of fact, you look at this chart, this is going back further. California sales really are at a pretty mild level. The mix is different, and we'll talk about that, and I'm going to ask some questions about that. But the sales are not extraordinary, and yet there goes our inventory. Why I think I land on a different space than most people is I've studied this inventory chart. And when you're at 3 months of inventory, if you have more than 3 months of demand, would it make sense that you should have some pricing pressure? Well, we went down from 6 months to below 3 months on demand that's been very consistent. I believe that that demand still exists, and it's landing on inventory half of the level that it could be. And so I think we're going to have price aggression. That would make sense to me. Now, one of the things we have to figure out is somebody going to loan to us? So, and that's up for grabs. And a lot of things changed January 10th, and we'll talk about that. Another factor is, and this is why John Burns is here, to bring up a piece of puzzle we haven't seen emerge in any great quantity, new home builders. Are they going to give us a lot of inventory? Is that going to be a piece of the puzzle that changes the scenario? These are the new housing permits. Now, I just spent an hour a couple nights ago listening to his interview of three of the presidents. Of two of them were public builders and one was a private builder. And they're very optimistic about the future. And yet this is the chart of subdivisions in Riverside County and San Bernardino County. So we have a group of builders that are pretty happy about the future and not creating any subdivisions. So I really would like to get to the bottom of that, because I wonder if there's something else I don't know. I don't know what a lot of these people know that's specific to their industry. And that's why tonight's fun. I get to ask questions I don't know the answer to. Now, that when you have a radio show, you don't do that unless you are dealing with an expert, by the way. You can't just have 30 seconds of dry time and go, boy, I thought he would know that. I don't know it either. But tonight I'll take some of that risk. The share of equity sales, there's going to be a line show up eventually. Or maybe that's what... I have to push the button again. The equity sales have grown and grown and grown. Well, that chart doesn't look to me like it's going to go the other way. And so here's a good question. When you have an equity seller, what do they do the day their house closes? They buy another one. I don't know how you go from 3 months of inventory to 6 months of inventory if that's the predominant seller and they're going to buy another property. There's also this group of people that were foreclosed on. Sorry, not that group. That's another group. That's a lot of people. But what about the people that hung in there perfectly current and now they have equity? There's a thought that says that those people are going to be so happy to get out of home ownership, they're going to sell and become a renter. If any group has proven they want to own something more important than the numbers, it's that group. So I'm not buying that. So I just don't know how we lack demand. Oh, there's the other one. I didn't push the button enough, I guess. Okay. And there's another one. Doggone it. What's that saying is the mix of sales is definitely headed toward equity sellers, and all of the things that I feel could damage price is now becoming a non-issue. All of the factors that add inventory to the mix are improving as far as motivated sellers. We have improved in delinquency rates, improved foreclosure rates. We have Sean O'Toole from what used to be Foreclosure Radar, now Property Radar, and he's snuck in a fast one on me when we're in the car. Sure enough, he's looked at charts he didn't tell me about, so he's got some statistics I didn't know existed, but we'll talk about it, because it has to do with price aggression and what happened to the median price and where did it land? Did it land mostly on distressed assets or normal sales? Mortgage rate. You see in the paper all the time, mortgage rates have soared, you know? When you get into a business in 1980 and 81, and you refinanced your house to become an investor at 17.5%, 4.5% isn't soaring. It's the mildest thing you've ever seen in your life, except for the last 12 months. So I guess the point is, yeah, we had an interest rate hike, but did it price enough people out? And so Leslie Appleton Young, and they're really one of the favorite things they like to talk about is affordability. And so we'll talk about that chart and see if there's still enough room for people to get in. And there's the affordability chart. So we're down all the way to 36. Oh, my. I'm not afraid of that number. Okay. We're going to talk with Christopher Thornburg a little bit about GDP growth, because that has to do with the future of interest rates. So are we going to see enough GDP growth that the Fed says, okay, we're going to quit helping everything out, and all of a sudden interest rates do a major shift? Unemployment, it's coming down, still has a ways to go. California's still a bigger number than the nation. Getting closer and closer, though. International buyers certainly have picked up. That number has changed from 2012 now at 8%, a fair amount of them all cash. So it's interesting. What is the history of foreign buyers? As prices accelerate, do they go away, or they become stronger in volume? We'll talk about that. First-time buyers, and this is one chart that really is very different than normal. When you come off of a bottom, the normal number of sales, and this doesn't go back enough, but percentage of sales usually at first-time buyers, let's say in 95 and 6, was about 50%, and now we're at 28. So it'd be really interesting to see why they're not participating. Are they getting beat out by all cash buyers, or they can't qualify? What's the story? Because that number is the missing link to demand, to me. That's where I think a lot of demand is possible, if they can get a loan. We'll talk about the credit score differences. This is a, I don't know if I can, if you look at that chart on top, you'll see the aggressiveness of 2008, where we were loaning to people that had FICO scores very different than we are now. And so there's category, this is for FHA, 300 FICO score to 579. I didn't know you could have a 300 FICO score. But we were loaning 23% of all the FHA loans to that group, and then to under 639, 36%. So 60% of FHA's credit was going to that group. In case you wonder why we have some losses, that could be part of it. But now, what are we loaning? We're loaning 9% to those people. So we're going to talk to Deborah about, have we gone too far, and what's about to happen January 10th to the mortgage industry. Because I think we can have an aggressive year, but we got to have somebody say yes to a loan. And so all these things are important. FHA is declining. And what's odd about that is you just had a group of buyers that used to own that showed up after 3 years of a foreclosure. And can they get a Fannie Mae loan? No. This is the loan they will get. But the numbers are staggering. And those of you that have seen the presentations before, in Riverside and San Bernardino County, a year and a half supply of demand were foreclosed on in 08 and 09. 3 years later, they could re-enter the market and get an FHA loan. But they probably had a hard time competing with all the cash buyers. So I'm not buying that demand has been met. I think it's yet to be fulfilled. Fannie and Freddie are the market. By the way, I want to thank Leslie Appleton Young and Sean O'Toole for generously always letting me use their charts. What's funny is we interpret them different, but it's really cool to have all their research. It really is. And what this chart does, if you look all the way to the left, those were the days where we had something other than Fannie and Freddie and FHA funding loans. And now we don't. And so that's a real concern going forward, is if the goal was to downsize Fannie and Freddie, okay, well then how are we going to fund loans? And so that's real important. Also, we're going to talk about the lowering of the loan amounts. This is one of my favorite all-time pictures in 2005, Home Sweet Home. The timing wasn't good, you know. We felt really happy about that, but it didn't turn out that it was going to continue. In 2014, I don't know if it's going to be that kind of year or another time cover in 2010 where it said, rethinking home ownership. Is home ownership now really a bad idea? And so I would land on this square, and we're going to see how it plays out. But I think the reasoning of a strong up movement in price still exists in 2014 as it did in 2013. And we'll see how it plays out, and I'm really going to enjoy having conversations with everybody on the panel tonight.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Adrenaline Athletics, Claudia Buys Houses, Coldwell Banker Town and Country, Elite Auctions, Phoebe for Investors by Investors, Homevestors, In a Day Development, Inland Empire Investors Forum, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Investor Experts, Inc., John Merrill Investments, Inc., Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, Lavis Associates, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Northern San Diego Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club Phoebe, Personal Real Estate Magazine, Pilot Limo, Primary Residential Mortgage, Realty 411 Magazine, Real Wealth Network, REIExpo.com, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Southwest Riverside County Association of Realtors, Sonoka Corporation, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA, Tony Alvarez, The Bottom Feeders, Tri-Emerald Financial Group, and Westin South Coast Plaza. See isurvivedrealestate.com for video of the live event and more on our sponsors.